Well, they're absolutely right. Engagement is actually very broad. It can be very vague because it actually encompasses so many things. Being engaged in class can be just focusing, being attentive, but also being involved in participating in, you know, in the content or the skill area that's being taught at that moment. But then going beyond that, it's kind of reflecting on what you know, your prior knowledge, and linking that with what's happening in the classroom or what's being taught at that moment as well. Then, of course, there's the emotional engagement that comes from connecting with what's happening so that you see the long-term benefits of study and the progress that it can have or the impact it can have on your life, et cetera, the mental engagement, et cetera. So it's very broad, hence the ambiguity associated with it.
So if students are disengaged, whatever that may mean, what problems arise in their education?
It could range from a number of issues. The most immediate would be that they would disengage in the classroom. They would demonstrate some form of distraction, not complete work, become bored and disconnected from what's happening. And the long term of that is that, you know, the growing gaps in what they should have been learning then becomes evident. And so it leads to students dropping out of school, not achieving their potential, and as a result, you know, becoming, I suppose, to some degree, a liability in our society. So it does, even though 20% might seem it's just one in five students, but it actually is quite concerning if you look at the long-term risk of that.
And is disengagement more common in primary school or high school?
Probably at this stage more common in high schools. Primary school students tend to be a little bit more focused given their age and immaturity and their dependence on the teacher. But high school students who are coming into their own identities, often during year 9, year 8, the dropouts usually happen in year 10. So yes, it's become more apparent in the secondary school, unfortunately.
And Pearl, also with this, I suppose if they get into this habit of being disengaged at school, can that also, again, if they continue with further education, like lead on to problems or in that or even in the workplace?
Oh, certainly. And that happens. One of the issues that came out of that study as well is the fact that some forms of disengagement resulted out of burnout. And that usually happens with higher education and, like you said, even in the workplace. So higher ed students are often working very, very hard. They tire themselves out. And as a result, there's, in some cases, that instance of them being disengaged in class. So apart from the other factors that we talked about earlier, they have an added layer of the fact that, you know, the work is too difficult and too challenging and it's draining them and exhausting them. And as a result, yeah, that does lead to some fairly serious consequences for them because they might be 2 or 3 years into a study program. And then that leads to them leaving that and having wasted all that time and effort and money. So, yeah, it does become quite serious. And like I said, it has to be kept in the context of a much wider society. One in five may not seem significant, but it is concerning.
And Pearl, you mentioned the burnout as one result or cause of disengagement. What are some other factors contributing to this?
To higher education?
Or to disengagement?
Disengagement in schools, like I said, sometimes it just happens that the work that's being done is not challenging enough and it hasn't quite tapped into the student's area of interest or their learning profile in some respect. And that happens to any human being, I suppose. You know, you would disconnect from something that you are not quite connecting with. And as a result, a student can become immensely bored, especially if something is very difficult. And they realize that their success within that is going to be limited or not at all, then they don't want to participate. So I suppose in the piece that I wrote for the conversation, I said that there must be some way in which teachers are able to differentiate so that they can actually accommodate that student's need as well, so they don't feel that sense of overwhelming difficulty.
And what about the idea that maybe more flexible timetables might help
Yes, absolutely. Sometimes the school day is very structured. It's very rigid. And that's, of course, because of the way we do school. But at the same time, we've got to accommodate the fact that our lives have changed. So much has happened in our world. You know, we're in this information explosion, and students often self-direct learning. And to some degree, they must be given that control at school as well, where there's a sense of I own what I'm going to be doing, and therefore I believe that I will succeed. So yes, I think they should have some degree of control, even when it comes to their timetables as well.
And is this problem restricted to Australia, or is it a big issue overseas as well?
We discovered that it's probably, or from the report as well, and even looking at other studies around that, that it's probably not limited just to Australia. But some of the issues that we have are very Australian. But the results that came out of the testing out of PISA, for example, shows that there are some countries in the world where students function quite effectively within that rigid classroom structure, where mastery systems are used, for example. But Australia is not quite in that arena, and as a result, we have different issues. So okay. To give you an example, we use things like open plan learning, which not many countries in the world use at the moment, and that leads to other forms of distraction and background noise, interference, etc.